5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
This is About Space, America's return to space, with news and information on our U.S. space program. Is your host of About Space, David Denault.
Welcome, and thanks for joining me today, remembering Apollo 15, 50 years ago. The 1971 Apollo 15 mission began on July the 26th and ended on August the 7th. It was the 9th crewed mission in the United States Apollo program and the 4th to land on the moon. It was the first longest stay on the moon and had a greater focus on science than earlier landings. And Apollo 15 had the first use of the lunar roving vehicle. You'll hear from the commander of Apollo 15 next on About Space Today. Are you ready to fly away on a dream vacation? For cruises and all-inclusive resort vacations, call D&D Cruise and Tours at 877-747-8631. That's 877-747-8631. And see us on Facebook, D&D Cruise and Tours, where your dreams become a reality. Welcome back. Remembering Apollo 15. The commander, Dave Scott, and lunar module pilot, James Irwin, who passed away in 1991, landed near Hadley Rill, while command module pilot, Alfred Worden, orbited the moon. Well, Scott recalls what it took to be the commander for the fourth lunar landing.
I was lucky in the queue. I was lucky in the flights I got to fly. And being able to get ready for 15, I'd flown Gemini 8, more on that later, Apollo 9, I learned a command module, got ready for 15, and Jim Irwin was absolutely the expert in the lunar module. I didn't have to learn much. Jim was there. Al was so tuned into the command module. I didn't have to think about that, so I had to find something to do. And I thought, gee, you know, this rock stuff is pretty cool. And so I was looking around. We'd had these geology courses that, pretty boring. And finally, Jack Schmidt came up and said, hey, I got the right instructor for you. And I thought, boy, I sure hope so. So all of a sudden shows up Lee Silver from Caltech, who was absolutely the most brilliant professor I have ever had. And he lit the fire. He really lit the fire. So I was lucky. I got there at the right time. I had a great professor, and I had Jack as a tutor constantly. So there was Jack, there was Lee Silver. You know, Al had the command module handled. Jim had the lunar module handled. Shoot, I had the geology wired, man. How could I miss? And that's where I really got to it.
And no space mission goes without a few issues. Command module pilot Al Worden commented on the problems they encountered.
When you get in space, a leaky faucet is kind of a problem, because what you get is a ball of water on the end of the faucet that keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And if it breaks away, it can go behind the instrument panel and it could cause lots of electrical problems. I am convinced that the solution to this problem is why we send people into space rather than robots, because robots would never figure this out. You'll never guess what the solution was. Well, the solution was, we got a towel and we wrapped it around that bubble of water and we absorbed it. A very simple thing, but a robot would never think about that. Anyway, there were a couple of other surprises that I probably should mention. I don't want to put my commander down, but I thought maybe I should mention a couple of things. One is, when the first stage shut down during our launch, Jim Irwin and I found ourselves flailing like crazy to stay away from the instrument panel, because we're going from 4.5 G's one way to maybe 0.5 G the other way. That was a big surprise, and I recall Jim and I both looking at Dave and saying, what about that? And Dave said, gee, guys, I forgot to tell you about that. So, a couple of things like that. Woke up the next morning after we got in space, had the worst backache of my life. And Dave says, gee, guys, I forgot to tell you about that. So there's a couple of things like that. No big deal. You know, we survived it. It was fine. But from the mechanical standpoint, we only had two things that I can think of. One was the water leak, and the other was we had a short in one of the electrical lines to the service propulsion system engine that we had to work around. And that's the only two things I can think of.
Had the glass and
the
lunar module?
Oh, the glass and lunar module.
Yeah.
We had,
but Jim took care of that.
Oh, he did?
No, sure.
Oh, so there was that with duct tape?
Actually, had
it was vacuum cleaner.
What vacuum cleaner? One of the panels on one of the instruments broke during launch, and there were glass shards floating around. Jim went into the lunar module to check it out. The glass shards all over the place. So that got handled by a quick call down to MCC. Get the vacuum cleaner and suck it all up.
Scott and Irwin explored the local area using the lunar rover, allowing them time to travel further from the lunar module than had ever been possible on previous missions. And what was it like?
Well, you know, it's interesting in that there's really no comparison. The rover was designed to operate in 1/6 G on a lunar surface, and we could never really simulate that on the Earth. They tried to simulate 1/6 G in the centrifuge building on wires, and that didn't work. You could drive it across a trainer we had. You could drive it across the Earth, 1 G. That wasn't the same. And you really never got a chance to feel what it was like to drive it till you got to the moon. But I got to tell you, that's one of the most brilliant pieces of engineering this country or the world has ever come up with. It was absolutely spectacular. The way it unfolded, and I could go on for hours about that thing, but it was as a lot of you already know, it was an electrically powered car. Each wheel had its independent drive, and we had front and rear steering on it, so it could drive around rocks and boulders and craters. And the lunar surface is absolutely irregular. There's nothing level about it. There are small rocks, big rocks, small craters, big craters, shadowed craters, no craters. It's really tough to drive it. On the other hand, it's very responsive, and it's just a superb piece of machinery. We went all of about 12 miles an hour, but that's really fast on the moon. And the real challenge was poor old Jim sitting in the right seat. You know, when you're driving a car, it's okay, you can drive the car. The person in the car, not knowing where you're going, has a tough time. And old Jim was hanging on for dear life. But he said, hey, this is like a bucking Bronco. I said, yeah, it sure was. But anyway, it was a brilliant piece of machinery. It got us around. We went about 26 kilometers, three different sites, and it provided the transport not only for Jim and I, but for extra geology tools and the rocks and that sort of thing. So it was a fabulous machine.
Scott and Irwin spent 18 and a half hours on the moon's surface on extravehicular activity, EVA, and collected 170 pounds, or 77 kilograms, of surface material. But in addition, the Apollo 15 crew brought a remembrance to be left on the moon.
We had these conversations about what do you do? You know, we train geology, we learn how to land on the moon, LLTV, ALS-EVA, you know, heavy-duty training, but we also took some time in the evenings or at the beach house to talk about other parts of the life in the world and what you do. And we were fortunate that there were 14 guys who put their lives down so that we could get to where we were. And we decided one evening sometime, I don't remember when, but we thought we should recognize them and honor them for contributing all they had so we could get to where we were. So we had this little plaque design, the little model of a fallen astronaut. And one of the last things I did on the moon, in fact, Jim reminded me of it, we were closing out, had to put the rover back in the back so the TV could be pointed. And I put the plaque out, and a little miniature astronaut out there, took a couple pictures, and I felt pretty good about that. And so did Jim, and so did Al, that we recognized some guys who had really, on both sides of the Iron Curtain, who had really contributed everything to get to where we were, which was fortunate for us, and we appreciated all that and wanted to leave something for them.
And at the same time, Command Module pilot Al Worden orbited the moon, operating various sensors in the sim bay of the service module. This suite of instruments collected data on the moon and its environment, and he deployed a lunar subsatellite at the end of the moonwalks. Once again, Commander Dave Scott.
And we had Al to take care of the command module, and you know, he pointed out, we're on a surface for 3 days, and he was alone for 3 days, and he had to be there when we got back. He had to do a big maneuver to change planes so we could catch him, and there he was all by himself. I never worried 1 minute. I was never concerned for 1 second. I knew Al would be there. So thanks. He got us back.
The mission also saw the collection of the Genesis rock, thought to be part of the moon's early crust. And Scott used a hammer and a feather to validate Galileo's theory that when there is no air resistance, objects fall at the same rate due to gravity, regardless of their mass.
A little side story here. Part of our geology training actually was to get together in the crew quarters after dinner with geologists who would lecture, and we'd talk about Hadley Rill and what was there and what we did and what we should do. But another thing we talked about towards the end of the training was, what can we do on 15 that would be unique, interesting, educational, and fun? Well, probably the most ink, the most video the kids see about Apollo 15 these days is a hammer and the feather.
Well, in my left hand I have a feather, in my right hand a hammer. And I guess one of the reasons we got here today was because of a gentleman named Galileo a long time ago who made a rather significant discovery about falling objects in gravity fields. And we thought that where would be a better place to confirm his findings than on the moon. And so we thought we'd try it here for you. The feather happens to be appropriately a falcon feather. And I'll drop the two of them here, and hopefully they'll hit the ground at the same time. How about that? Mr. Galileo was correct in his findings.
At the end of Apollo 15's 74th lunar orbit, the engine was fired for the journey home. And during the return trip, Worden performed the first spacewalk in deep space. The Apollo 15 mission splashed down safely on August the 7th, despite the loss of one of three parachutes. Be sure to have your family and friends listen each Tuesday with me on About Space Today, and on Friday, America in Space with Dawn Meyer from Florida's Space Coast. And follow us on Facebook for space news and updates at aboutspace.today. And our Tuesday shout-out goes to Arlington Heights, Virginia, with its many listeners there who enjoy our weekly program. And to all our friends and listeners around the globe and here in the U.S., thank you for listening to Apollo 15 Remembered. I'm David Denault, and this has been About Space Today.